The Meaning of Marxism by Paul D'Amato. Section. Nothing will come of nothing. We have already shown how in a market economy, commodities are exchanged as equivalents, that is, according to how much labor time they contain. Yet, if equal values exchange on the market, according to the amount of labor time they embody, then where does the profit come from? How is it that something can be sold for more than it was purchased for? Perhaps that's all profit is, setting a price above cost. But if everyone selling commodities simply marked up the cost of their products, they would have to pay the same inflated prices of other sellers who were doing the same thing. The nominal price of everything might go up, but the relative value of each thing wouldn't change, and no one would gain. In other words, the markups would cancel each other out, and still there would be no extra value. To use Marx's terms, no surplus value is added to commodities during the process of circulation. Surplus value has to come from somewhere else, in the process of production. As already discussed, the historical evolution of capitalism not only involves a division of labor, in which isolated individuals produce for the market, but also the separation of the means of production, the tools, machinery, and physical plant necessary for production, from the mass of workers. Once this separation takes place, the majority, the working class, are forced to sell their labor power to the minority, the capitalist class that has concentrated these means of production into its hands. And the owners of these means of production also, therefore, own the products of labor and the proceeds from their sale. As Marx jokingly related, the marketplace where goods are exchanged is seen as a very Eden of the innate rights of man, where alone rule freedom, equality, and property, because each exchange equivalent for equivalent. The exchange between labor and capital, where workers are forced by their own very survival needs to seek employment, is portrayed as a fair exchange between two equal partners. But if the value of a commodity is determined by the amount of necessary labor time embodied in it, then what is the value of labor? Here we have to make a distinction between the value of labor expended, i.e., as it is contained in an amount of work or product, and the value of someone's capacity to labor. Marx argued that the value of this particular commodity, labor power, is equal not to what a worker can produce, but to the labor time necessary to make up what it costs to keep a worker and a worker's family alive and functioning, the cost of producing and reproducing labor power. Marx put it this way, quote, like that of every other commodity, its value, labor power, is determined by the quantity of labor necessary to produce it. A certain mass of necessaries must be consumed by a man in order to grow up and maintain his life. But the man, like the machine, will wear out, and must be replaced by another man. Beside the mass of necessaries required for his own maintenance, he wants another amount of necessaries to bring up a certain quota of children that are able to replace him on the labor market and to perpetuate the race of laborers. Moreover, to develop his laboring power and acquire a given skill, another amount of values must be spent. For our purpose, it suffices to consider only average labor, the costs of whose education and development are vanishing magnitude. End quote. In order to set their workplaces into motion, capitalists must bring together means of production, machinery and raw materials, and labor power by purchasing them on the market. The workers, using the machinery, then work up the raw materials into a finished product to be sold. The capitalist totals the cost of the used-up raw materials together with the amount of incremental wear and tear, and includes it in the final cost of the product. These things are products of past labor, and as they are used up, they pass their value onto the new product. But new labor time is needed to work up the final product by current living labor. And this also goes into the final value of the product. In other words, the value of a commodity is made up of two parts: constant capital, or what Marx called accumulated labor, passed on by the machinery, which adds its value as the machine wears out, and the raw materials to make the product, and variable capital, or what Marx called living labor, which is added by workers in the immediate process of production. The capitalists pay for all the value added by accumulated or dead labor, but only part of the value added by living labor. If a capitalist sold a product by the cost of wages plus materials and machinery wear and tear, there would of course be no profit. The capitalist would merely get back what he or she paid out. It is, Marx noted, a piece of good luck that labor's use is greater than what the capitalist pays for that use. The value of labor power, that is, wages, is less than the value of output that this labor can produce. Put another way, workers produce enough value to cover the costs of their wages, variable capital, in just a part of the working day. The labor performed for the rest of the working day does not have to be paid for. It is surplus labor, which produces surplus value. And therefore, when the product is sold, this unpaid portion goes into the pocket of the capitalists. So, the source of surplus value, and thus profits, is unpaid labor. The appearance of equality in the market, whereby a capitalist buys labor at a fair price, as we now see, hides good old-fashioned exploitation. Capitalists don't really care whether they're producing steel girders or computers, green beans or golf balls, as long as they end up with more money than when they started. And they can't do that without exploitation. Bourgeois economists squirm around this fact. They have long tried to portray profit as the capitalist's reward for being a capitalist, for being so kind as to employ people who otherwise would starve, and for, quote, risk-taking. Profit, according to the 19th century economist John Stuart Mill, writing in 1848, represents a recompense for the capitalist's forbearing to consume his capital for his own uses, his remuneration for abstinence. According to this logic, if the capitalist is going to be so altruistic as to skimp on his own needs in order to invest his hard-earned capital, he should get back a little in return. Yet Mill is forced to admit that the surplus that accrues to capitalists must come somewhere. The cause of profit, he acknowledges, is that labor produces more than is required for its support. When put this plainly, it is hard to argue with. The capitalist's reward, in fact, results from workers forbearing to consume the fruits of their own labor. Whether capitalists reinvest the surplus to expand production, or whether they spend it on their own personal luxury, and they do both in extravagant proportions, they are making use of wealth they did not produce. It is not abstinence on the part of the bosses, but on the part of the workers, that explains profit. End of section.